This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You're listening to Stand Up Straight. We aim to provide a vehicle for allies to stand up for the rainbow communities, facilitating change, acceptance, understanding, and dialogue. Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Stand up
straight now. You're welcome to Stand Up Straight. You're on Joy 94.9. And Michelle and I, the first time in the studio.
And who's the I?
Jeff.
And for those that don't know Jeff, and it's not a new voice to Joy, certainly a new voice to Stand Up Straight, and yes, we're going to claim you as our own pretty much from now on as well. Where would they know you from, Jeff?
From Sunday Fusion. Did the last grid in the early morning for those who were waking early, 7 till 9.
Does that exist on a Sunday morning?
Well, it does, yes.
Gosh. So Jeff is panelling and co-hosting with me tonight.
Yes.
And all the folks that do radio here on Joy 94.9 put an awful lot of time, energy, in for nothing. I think a lot of people forget that Joy...
We're all volunteers.
We are all volunteers, but we sound so slick and professional, though, don't we? So at the top of Stand Up Straight's hour, we do like to start with a little bit of this. What have you done today to make you feel I do sometimes proud? Sing, Jeff, but...
Ally of the Week on Stand Up Straight.
I'm going to choose not to sing along to that. Beck, that's often in the studio, she does like to sing, but... She doesn't. She's not here. She's actually over in England.
Okay,
in the snow.
Yeah.
So Ally of the Week is a little bit, it's basically anywhere, local, international, on your street, on the public transport, that does something that inspires you, and it's an ally to the GLBTI community in lots of different ways. Before I give mine, I'm going to briefly introduce who our guests are. I'm going to get to know them a little bit in a couple of minutes' time, but I'm going to bring them to the microphone. We have Dr. Peter Brace and his son, Daniel, and they can come and join us on the microphone now. Hi.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for joining us tonight. Daniel is not unfamiliar to the Joy Airwaves either.
It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you in with us. For Peter, we'll go a little bit more gentle because he's brand new to the Joy Studios. So the reason I wanted to bring you in, we've father and son, obviously, so I'm wondering whether your father, Daniel, has been an ally to you.
Yes, he has. Yep, absolutely. Especially over the marriage equality stuff as, recent discussions. Yep, there's been a vote yes sticker on the house.
It is a beautiful thing to see allies coming out in force in lots of different ways that we hadn't anticipated. Have you noticed anyone overseas or locally, Daniel, that you'd classify as an ally of the week?
Well, I was on the tram and this voice said, Daniel Brace, do you remember me? And I thought, oh, no, this is how embarrassing if I miss somebody. And it was a girlfriend from high school who was one of my first allies who used to, fly the flag for me and look out for me at high school. So it was lovely to see Catherine Volkoff.
Oh, how lovely. And means more at the moment, I would think, especially, with the marriage equality debate coming up. Yeah. One of my allies of the week is the lovely Pink. She is an extraordinary ally of the GLBTI community. But one of the things that struck me was she's got two young children and she's decided to raise her children as gender neutral. So she says she does not want her kids to be defined by their gender and is raising them to be whoever they want to be and present themselves however they want. The singer, who is a mother of Willow and Jameson, is a champion of non-conformity both in her career and at home. So there's a couple of allies. See, allies come in all shapes and sizes, don't they? So Jeff's giving me that wind-up. He's very, very officious, this young man. And I'm going to come back and chat with Peter and Daniel Brace. You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Sue.
We do a podcast called This Is Our Lives.
It's fun and, well, it's a little left of centre.
We talk about all things important
and irrelevant
in the world right here in Melbourne, Australia.
This Is Our Lives is only available via Joy Podcast.
Exclusive to Joy, in fact.
Well, that's a bit fancy, Lisa.
No.
We would love you to subscribe. It's easy.
Just like you, Sue.
Hey, you can hear the regular podcasts on joy.org.au/our.
Or via iTunes. We might just fluff your feathers.
You're listening to Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
She's my mum.
Peter and Daniel have joined us in the studio. One of the things I love, love, love about Stand Up Straight and what we have done for 4.5 years is tell people's stories. Now, sometimes the stories are really simplistic or light and fluffy, and sometimes they're really serious and can be somber, and then everything in between. The thing that has drawn me to Daniel and Peter's story is it's not one of, let's just say, smooth sailing. Would that be correct?
So,
the lovely thing also about some guests is that they say nothing's off limits, or yes, you can ask me everything. That's the best thing as an interviewer to have that said to you. So I'd love for you to both give me a little bit of a background of where you lived, your growing up, your family, your siblings, you know, just you know, basic stuff and set the scene.
Well, it's funny, you know, being radio, I, of course, bought a visual aid, which, you know, it's not so useful.
Oh, how beautiful.
It's a photograph of me and my little sister all dressed up. I'm wearing a suit and I think I'm about maybe 7 years old and she's about six years old and wearing a dress. And it's taken in New Zealand.
How old would you be? I'm looking at a picture of, I don't know, what, 11 or 12?
Oh, no, much younger.
No, younger.
Yeah. 7 or 8, I think.
Mm. Beautiful. Did you choose that suit, Daniel? Did you?
I chose the tie.
You chose the tie. Sure. It's a lovely sky cobalt blue. So, yes, you bought the photograph in.
I bought the photograph in. This was a regular occurrence, you know, getting dressed up in our household because we were Jehovah's Witnesses. So we would go quite regularly door knocking and selling the Watchtower magazine or to meetings. So I spent a lot of my childhood in a suit, really. Mm. So while I may not have picked the suit, the tie definitely.
Did you get more outlandish as you got older?
Maybe it was a giveaway.
Maybe. We'll find that out later.
In hindsight, yeah.
Yeah. And so you, one sister?
Two sisters.
Two sisters, yeah.
I'm the middle child. Mm-hmm. Maybe, Dad, you want to say something about?
Yes. So, yeah, I guess the kids were born in New Zealand. All of them grew up there. We were, I guess, a pretty devout household religiously, as Daniel said, and very much brought up the kids in the faith as well.
Does that dictate pretty much everything that you do in your life?
It does. It dictates not only what you do, but how you think as well.
So your week would be church every day, prayer every day. How does that
take place? Yeah, you know, prayer every day, every meal, church probably 3 times a week. Weekend activities. There's a lot to it, yeah.
Do you remember loving it, Daniel, hating it, or that was just your norm?
Look, I loved it, yeah. It was life, you know, and it gave a sense of purpose, routine. I think I went through periods where I didn't like it so much.
In your teenage years, is it more so we tend to not like what our parents tell us to do?
Definitely teenage years, yeah. But even younger than that, I think I went through a few phases of finding it a bit tiring, maybe.
What do you mean?
There was a constant need to engage. So you couldn't just go to a meeting, but you have to answer a question or maybe give a talk, for example. So there was a lot of work as well. And as kids, you know, we like to play, not so much work. Mm. But I did love it. It was just part of what we did as a family, and you don't question those things either when you're little.
And as a teenager, did you have, were all your friends in the church?
Our whole family was, and our extended family, a very close extended family. And our friends were, because myself and my two sisters were homeschooled as well, so we didn't go to a school. And, you know, that was for a variety of reasons, but that also kept our socials social circle
smaller
yeah. And yeah, always within the faith.
So did you have other activities outside of your church and your family and your extended family? What other things would you have been doing?
We would go out. We were just talking before about, you know, concerts and plays that we would go to, so we were pretty conscious, I think, about you know, getting exposed to culture as well.
Was that because the children were homeschooled, so you wanted to have a different type of balance, not just... Because I'm wondering what your social network would be as younger children, whether you've got... If it's your family and friends only, if so, as you go to school, you've got hundreds of kids around. So I'm wondering how different that is.
It'd be very different, I think. And the social network would definitely revolve around the family and the church. Being homeschooled, there was some contact with other families that were doing that as well, but probably not that much.
Is there a particular reason that you chose homeschooling?
Partly because the church encourages you to, you know, avoid those outside influences as much as possible. So that was a minor factor in this. And I guess part of it was I didn't have a really positive experience at school, and it seemed that we could teach the kids just as well at home.
That was really fascinating. You said to avoid outside influence. Mm. So that to me is huge. Mm. And this is by no means a criticism. I like to travel. Our family had travelled. Growing up, we travelled, whether it was around Australia or overseas. We were Jewish and we were involved in our synagogue, but we were involved in lots and lots of other things outside of the synagogue and our circle of friends. So I'm wondering why there's that difference in... Is it a fear, or is it that you don't have the control if they've got too many outside influences? And I'm wondering what they are specifically, if you...
Yeah, well I'm...
He hates me already.
No, that's fine, Michelle. That's fine. No, appreciate the question. I mean, I think you think about a cult, right? And a cult is totally shutting off the outside world. This is not really a cult we're talking about, but I think the technical term is high control group.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, influence. Be careful what you read, what you watch, who you talk to. You know, if you're talking to someone who's not in the faith, your objective is to really try and influence them and bring them in. So
is it also about protecting your own as well? Does it come down to that? Well, I want my children and my nieces and nephews to grow up the way I want, that I believe is right. So is it a bit of a fear as well?
Yeah, fear is probably the right word. It might not be expressed that way, but yeah, there's certainly an element of that.
There was something that interested me from what you were saying there, that I grew up in a small country town, and I, even though the situation was different in terms of religiosity in that sense, but I know that there is a lot more of that kind of common idea about what you should do in a village environment, and everyone's sort of it's almost sort of, if I want to say, more restrictive.
Yeah.
So I understand where that can be and how that can influence people. And my father particularly was very comfortable in that environment, yet it was something that I found difficult.
Yeah. I mean, there are many positive things about close-knit communities. You know?
Yes.
It's great, all right? Yeah. But you've kind of got to have that balance between the community and outside the community as well. Because I think the thing with a close-knit community is that's great when everyone fits in.
Fits in, yeah.
If you've got someone who's a little bit different...
And their wants and needs change from time to time.
And what was it, if you can think, if there was one or a couple of things that you were most fearful of, was it... Well, you answer that and then I'll ask my next question. What were you most fearful of?
I guess it's hard to explain, really. I guess in a situation like that, probably the thing you're most fearful of is losing your own faith.
And that of your children's as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there pressure to, in amongst the your church and your community, is there a pressure to maintain a level, for want of a better word, like the way you conduct your family life and your religious life? Is there a pressure to conform to a certain standard?
Yeah, there's a pressure not only to conform to a standard, but to improve that standard and to continually get better, yes.
How do you define what's getting better then?
Well, it's being more closely aligned to the tenets of the faith. I guess that's how you describe it. Yeah.
And is this discussions you've had with your father over years, or is this new conversations that you've heard in a way?
Oh, look, I don't think we've talked about it in these terms, really. But I think we have an understanding of, you know, of the experience. Mm. And, you know, the things that resonate with me are in being the one that didn't fit in and trying very hard to meet the standards and failing.
Mm. And that was, in fact, going to be my question. Was there ever any, did you ever hear a whisper or a talk or any discussion had about the GLBTI community or views on homosexuality? Did you know of any? So had you heard anything? I wonder if it had just permeated through into you or not.
Not just permeated, but very, you know, these were very clear directions.
And, which are what? What are they specifically?
That being gay was wrong.
Did they actually say that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, very much so.
So there's no gloss, sort of trying to break it to you gently scenario?
No. It's unacceptable. And so coming to terms with that was quite difficult for me, having an expectation that things would be different. And, yeah, it was very clear. That was not allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an important distinction, that to be gay, it's kind of recognised as something that happens, right? Mm. But to actually express that in a relationship with someone, that's what's wrong. Mm. And, you know, that's, to me, it's kind of cruel.
And I've heard that quite often. And I wonder what kind of torment you go through, Daniel, knowing that you're either letting your community and your church down and, in a sense, your father and your parents and your family. How does that affect you?
I think it has a lifelong effect, yeah. Really. And it certainly was very disruptive to our family life and to our relationship as well. And, you know, when you're coming up against those immovable obstacles where things are not permitted, that it's not okay, you know, you have to make these decisions about honour as well. You know, how far do you push it? How far do you try and express yourself and challenge people? And when do you just walk away?
Was it that it was a brick wall, did you feel? That it was, I can't even climb that, I can't tackle it, it will never change?
It was interesting for me personally. I didn't feel that way. I felt that I could tackle it, I could change it. But then thinking about, you know, the faith of my family and the sort of shame that it might bring them as well, yeah. That's where it's a different question.
And then is that guilt for you?
It was,
you would perhaps bring that on them?
Look, I remember Dad spent a lot of time with me with the books of John, studying the books of John, after I'd come out. You know, it's a saying that I had these tendencies, that I thought I was gay. And, you know, I spent quite a few years trying to control those and understand them and to shut them down as well.
I'd forgotten about that. I remember now, yeah.
Was this? Did you feel that this was your mission to try and convert him, so to speak, or fix? Was that more an apt word?
Yeah, I guess fix. It's hard to remember what was actually going through my mind because it seems almost alien to me now to think that way. But it must have been about trying to fix it. Yeah.
We in the studio. We have Dr. Peter Brace and his son Daniel. I just want to thank you even this far in, because there's a lot of honesty, and I would imagine I'm a parent myself, and hearing your child talk about things that we are part of, sometimes there's pain that we give indirectly to our children, or things that we have to fix, and it's a hard thing to have it back in your face. So we're going to come back and talk to Peter and Daniel Brace shortly. You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
I'm Dean Arcuri, and when listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9, it's not about same-same, it's all about being different, with Michelle on the mic.
We have Daniel and Peter Brace in the studio with us tonight. They're talking about their lives, challenges, and I think you've probably set a really interesting... You've set the scene for what I would imagine has been an interesting life. We have had a message in from Stephen. Great show and lovely to hear Daniel having an opportunity to tell his story. When it's all said and done, there is nothing more important than family. I think our job as parents is to love our kids no matter what. No bridge is ever so broken that it can't be mended. Much love to you all. That's from Stephen.
Oh, lovely.
And is and this is perhaps going a little bit higgledy-piggledy bit, mending bridges, is this something that is... Actually, you know what? We're not even going to ask that question yet. I'm going to go back to something that you... So you were saying about, and I said to you before, Peter, about as parents sometimes having your kids in front of us and talking about things that we may have forgotten about. Tell me a little bit about the next step. So, Daniel, you came out. How old were you when you... or is it was it gradual? Coming out?
I don't think so. I think I burst out of the closet. I was 13 years old and I remember it was in the back of the car and it was a dark night. I think it was winter and I said, I'm not getting married to a woman. So even then I knew marriage equality was going to happen. But I was fairly certain, fairly sure of myself. And part of that was to do with the training I'd received as a young person to be sure of to be sure of myself.
And conviction.
Conviction, yeah. Reasoning. And so I had sort of come to this, you know, early, well, puberty, I suppose, and realised that I was different. Yes, I remember that.
Sitting in the car in the back seat?
In the back seat. In the dark. In between my sisters.
Did they know you were going to say anything? Or just, was this a spur of the moment you decided?
I can't remember what caused it. And I don't even know if you were there in the car, Dad.
I don't remember that.
May have been my mother.
Yeah.
So what happened? Okay, so did your mum go in and tell your dad? What happened next? Do you remember?
I don't remember that conversation. I remember Daniel talking to, I think it was both of us, and telling us he was gay. And
so what happens next as parent, as and you are an upstanding member of your community, how do those discussions take place between yourselves in the family and then through the community? Or is it, do you try and keep it hush-hush? What do you do?
I'm trying to think back. It's a while ago now, but certainly within the family we talked about it a lot and talked to Daniel about it a lot. And although I probably felt that I was being supportive in not condemning him, I was basically still telling him that there was something wrong with him, you know, which I feel ashamed about now. But, you know, at the time it seemed like the, you know, the kind way to do it, supportive, but really not being supportive at all. So,
but you love your son and you loved your son then, your mum, your siblings, they love. So I don't imagine that it was an ugly home to be in. Was there still love and support, but not the way you would have wanted, Daniel? So how was the support, or was it limited, or did the people in the church, did they know?
Look, eventually people in the community knew about it, and I think especially as my struggles became more and more public, and looking for support, you naturally reach out to people. I always had this strange sort of, you know, wanting to fix it, wanting to be a good person, fit in. And on the other hand, I had a little transistor radio under my bed and I listened to Joy.
Did you really?
And you know, and I realised I would
you heard your stories,
this bigger community, and think, well, how is it that our community is so different to this one outside? And I used to, I can't remember the name of the magazines. I think it might have been, Brother Sister, maybe? I can't remember. But, the magazines, the free magazines I would pick up as well, just to read them. Well, I would devour them, really, to learn more about the outside world.
Did you want to run away from home?
Yes. Yeah. Look, and this sort of, I think, is a nice segue to that point in my life where I had to make a decision about this fight and what should I do? And, you know, that was a very difficult decision. And effectively, I ran away from home, but I didn't feel that there was a place for me there.
At home? But for what reason? Like, you were struggling and couldn't to reconcile your religion and your sexuality, but did your family make you feel unwelcome?
It's like you were saying, Dad, I think just before, you know, you do things in what you think is a supportive way at the time, but then, you know, actually how that is very different.
How it's perceived.
Yeah. So home was always welcoming and always loving, but there were conditions. And part of those conditions were about, you know, trying to do the right thing. You didn't have to do the right thing, but trying to. And meeting those family obligations. And when I decided that as a person, to you know, to develop as a person, this was an important part of me. It then became evident that it was best for me to develop that outside.
For your mental health?
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does that, do you have a conversation or did you literally run away from home?
No, I think I told. I think a bit like bursting out of the closet. I was quite secure in announcing that, you know, I was leaving. I did run away once from home.
Oh, we've all done that.
I went to Sydney for an opera.
Of course you did.
I got the train and I saw this opera. It was an early music opera, Monteverdi. And,
Monteverdi, yeah.
I told my parents I was going. They said, no. I said, too bad. So I went.
And you've never turned back since. So you left home.
But I left home, yeah. Left home at...
At what age?
I was 17.
That's very young.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty much as soon as I finished school.
So did you know where you wanted to go, what you wanted to do, or was it that more you knew that where you wanted to leave from?
It was more I wanted to leave behind some of those restrictions and to integrate myself into or find my community.
Did you know that there was a GLBTI community?
Well, through Joy, through those free newspapers, Commercial Road. You know, I used to walk up and down Commercial Road on my way...
Not like it is now, it's different.
No, very, very different.
And I've heard that was where very few places that people could go in Melbourne, and you would see like-minded, you'd see people holding hands, same-sex couples holding hands. So do you remember what you felt like when you looked around and you thought, wow, this is me or this is where I belong? Did you feel that?
Not really. You know, at first I thought, oh, all these poor people, they need help. You know, these poor people, you know, and they're, you know, if they were in the community, in the faith, then they'd be struggling just like me. And that's pretty sad.
So a pity.
Yeah, it was. They had to front up to the way things really are, then they should all be praying and fighting these urges. But eventually that gave over to, you know, it's fabulous. I'm going to be, you know, this is where I belong. Mm.
Did you, was that, do you think, the first time that you felt that you belonged?
It took me quite a few years, I think.
Mm. And how do you get to that stage of belonging?
Oh, it's an investment in yourself, I think, and also in giving to other people. I think it's when you start to give back to other people through your experience or through, you know, volunteer work or doing something like what you're doing, Michelle, here this evening, that you can feel part of building something better.
Mm. And that, in a sense, is a process, isn't it? You know, that like your father, you everyone goes through that. It's like step by step, and then... You know, I walked down Commercial Road many years ago and it's almost an alien environment, yet it was something that was also attractive. Yeah. And yet now it's so comfortable because it's known, you like. And isn't that a step process of that learning?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when you left home, was it never to look back, never to see your family and friends again, or never to see your parents? Or what happened when you did leave? So what was your family dynamics like?
A part of it was that I knew that they had strong faith, and so what I was doing was incompatible with that. Mm. So some of it was my stubbornness and resistance to bringing shame to them, to being an imposition. And I think in hindsight, I probably took on that role far too much. You know, I cut off ties very quickly and thought, well, I'm on my own now. I'm going to go out and perhaps that wasn't the case, but at the time it felt like that was the right thing to do.
Do you know, it's interesting because as Peter talked earlier about what was important in faith and how to present yourself and about trying to avoid outside influences, being strong and stoic, is in fact what was instilled in you and perhaps is what got you through, Daniel. Is no doubt you've probably thought that a million times before.
Yeah.
So did you cut off all ties with your parents?
Yeah, I pretty much did for a while.
How long would that have been for?
Oh, look. Dad, you look like you're about to say something.
I don't feel you weren't so much physically cut off because we still saw you, but there wasn't much of a connection there, really. Not much sort of conversation or intimacy, honesty.
No. Do you feel that he'd failed you at any point? Was there anything, did that ever enter into your mind?
No, I never felt that. I felt more that we'd failed him.
Really?
Yeah.
But why? Because from what you said, you've done everything that you could to create the best family environment, a strong, solid environment. So in what way did you think you'd fail?
Well, I guess failed him in that he hadn't turned out the way that we thought he should, but then later on failed him by not really supporting him. You know, you support him, but ask him to change is not the same as really supporting him, because you're not supporting who he is, you're supporting who you think he should be. You know, and that's not real support at all, I don't think.
But then Petey, though, you must have had tremendous conflict, because your flesh and blood is who you want to be there for 100%, but your religion is so vitally important to you in your life. So do you become, for want of a better word, less observant, less religious, or does religion play less of a part in order for you to... You know, I'm using hand gestures, which you can't see on radio. But like a weight, you less weight with the religion and more weight with your love and your for your son.
Well, I guess I'd been having a bit of a crisis of faith or a few doubts up until that time. And then, you know, when your religion teaches you that, you know, it's wrong to express yourself as a gay person and you know, those who do are condemned to eternal death, then when it's your son, you start to think, well, actually, there's something wrong here, you know? Yeah. You know, that's maybe a bit hypocritical, because you can think, well, it's okay for a stranger, but when it's your son, you go, you kind of reevaluate that and go, I don't think that's right. There's something that's wrong here. You know?
It's the ultimate turning point, I would imagine, because it's been entrenched. It's everything that you have lived and breathed. And you're right, people have had to then have a double standard. And isn't that when that the mirror's being held up in your face, and it's like, okay, is this really who I am? Is this really who I want to be? Did you then question perhaps all the things that have gone before, or what?
Well, when you're in a faith like that, everything is connected to the faith, right? Mm. So when that faith breaks down, everything breaks down. Your community breaks down, your morality, you know, that you have no standard against which to measure that anymore. Your plans for the future are different.
Really? Everything?
Everything changes. So that's, you know, that's kind of a hard thing to go through.
So your
whole
life was shaken? Your family life was shaken?
Yeah. Mm.
Did Daniel know that these feelings and it's not his fault, it's not your fault, it's circumstance, but did he realise that this had shaken you to your core?
No.
You both didn't?
I didn't, and not until many, many years later. I didn't realise at all.
And fault is the wrong word, because it's actually a good thing that happened, I believe.
You know, it's a really simple saying that I believe very strongly in, that out of bad comes good, and it's so simplistic, but there is always a good that comes out of. So your relationship, I would imagine, is so extraordinarily different now. So when we come back from the break, I'd love to have a bit of a chat about how it's changed, and they've both got grins on their face. So it's actually going to be a Love Like Mine, Miami Horror, Love Like Mine. I picked this because I kind of thought it might suit the evening.
I think it's got a bit of Prince about it. But
it's got a bit of dance about it, that's all I know. You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
I'm not afraid to you. Stand Up Straight with Michelle on Joy 94.9.
Yes, that is me and the lovely Jeff on the microphone.
Yes.
A bit less little calmer now, Jeff.
I'll be managing.
And we have Peter Brace and his son Daniel in the studio with us. So Daniel and Peter still with us talking about their relationship, and sometimes tumultuous, sometimes guilt-ridden, sometimes happiness and joy. And Joy had a special connection with you, Daniel. You said that you used to listen under your pillow.
I did, yeah.
Which would have been how many years ago, would you think?
20 years ago.
20 years ago.
20 years ago now.
And Peter, you weren't aware of that,
were you? No, I wasn't aware of that. And you know, looking back, I realised just how much support Daniel had from the gay community, you know, which is support that he should have been getting from me. So I really appreciate that. So to the gay community, thank you.
It is, and it's lovely, but you know, the shoulds should never come in our vocabulary, I have learnt as a parent, because we do what we do, which comes naturally to us, and whether it happens to be right or wrong at that moment in time, I think our children know that it's not meant to harm or hurt. I think that they do know that what we do in life for them is the best that we know. And I know we say we should have done this and that. We shouldn't. We did do what we... You know, you've got a relationship now that you wouldn't have had.
I was going to say, Michelle, you know, that's a very mature way of looking at it. Sometimes kids aren't that mature.
Like, no, I know.
It took me many years to realise that exactly what you said, that my parents were doing the best they could with the best that they had. And often, you know, when I was younger, I would look back at my life and think, oh, it's so unorthodox. It's so far from everybody else's experience. And as I get older, I value some of those differences more now. But, you asked me a question before we went to air about, you know, when it was that we sort of connected again.
Yeah, about reconnecting again, because you didn't really have much of a relationship for a long period of time. We're saying 5 years, 10.
I think about over 10 years. And, you know, during that time I'd lived in Sydney. So I'd been a Sydney queen as well and done Mardi Gras a lot and all the things that go
your stripes.
With it.
Peter, have you ever been to Mardi Gras?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, come on. That's something you should do.
Okay.
I'd also become HIV positive as well during that time. And I think it's really with Dad's second family, who I don't really call them a second family. They're my family as well. But it's with this whole new bunch of people that I feel very much more connected to my dad than perhaps I did in those early teenage years.
What is it? Is it because with age and maturity, or is it something else?
Maybe it's my age and maturity rather than Daniel's.
he's pretty mature this year.
Yeah, he's always been pretty mature. Maybe it's me.
Is it... do we soften it with age, though? Do you think is that a little bit of it too? We soften a bit?
Wisdom, I mean, I guess when you're going through that sort of losing your faith and losing everything that comes along with that, you kind of got to start from ground zero and rethink everything, you know, in terms of your morality and right and wrong. And I think that probably helps me to be more open and accepting.
So did your relationship have a ground zero then as well? Did you have to find a starting point, like how's the weather? You know, does it start... Simple, really. What do you do? Where are those building blocks?
I don't know. Just going out for a drink sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Just learning to be able to talk together again, because I guess there was conflict before, even if it wasn't expressed. There's conflict in beliefs and ideas.
So when you did see each other sparingly, was it just because you had to, you know, as weddings, bar mitzvahs, probably not bar mitzvahs, but you know, weddings and gatherings, and it was just very superficial? Was it that kind of thing?
I think we sort of kept in touch, but I certainly feel a lot closer to Daniel now.
So what have the discussions been like in recent years, Daniel? So you mentioned the HIV positive. So how have you've asked your parents, in a sense, to accept many things about you and accept the person that you are. So how do you have that discussion? And were you fearful perhaps of loss again or relationship breakdown again?
I think you used the phrase, you know, ground zero. I think having passed that, nothing else was really off limits. Yeah. So I didn't feel, that things could be damaged. In fact, it felt more that with sharing those things that there could be more understanding. And I think for me it was those little, the little moments, you know, that were the building blocks.
Yeah.
And you know, understanding that change can be very deep, you know, trusting that love again, you know, it's taken many years to get us here.
Yeah. It's because conversations aren't easy when they're very hurt, when you feel hurt, because you both hurt for various reasons. Do you have to, as a parent, Peter, bite your tongue more, or do you have to admit you were wrong more so that it enables Daniel to feel more able to communicate? I don't know if that's... I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm trying to get a sense of, do we have to just admit failure as parents sometimes?
Yeah, I'm pretty willing to admit failure, actually. Oh, that comes quite easy to me.
Yeah. I think it helps conversations. I truly do. And there's nothing wrong with saying, listen, I was wrong, I did the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that helps, Daniel?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
One thing I was interested in the greater family environment was the difficulties there as well, apart from you two.
So with your siblings or your mum?
Definitely. Yeah. Look, I was a bit of a problem for everybody.
You must have 80s shoulder pads, because that's huge. How do you carry that weight around, and do you not
The reason
anymore?
I sort of brought that up was that I'm in a family with obviously a number of other members of the family, and they have some problems and very, very conservative situations. So.
I think I'm lucky that there was always love there.
Yep.
There was a great foundation of love, and then, you know, other things are layered on top of that. You know, things can be done with kindness. And I still feel a lot of love for my family, but it's about that honesty, you know, about talking about things like HIV, you know. I don't know if I would do that with all of them.
Yeah, and that's the steps you take, and you manage the path.
And I've heard it said many times from the GLBTI community's perspective that they are asking a lot of their family and friends, because when we have kids, you know, and they're growing up, you just think, oh, they're going to get married and they'll buy a house and have two dogs and they'll, you know, I'm simplistic. You don't expect that it's not that. You kind of have a general kind of expectation. I know things are different, and I don't mean that to sound narrow-minded, but so when your child comes out as gay, oh, okay, so I'm having to think about a different set of circumstances or a different path I'm going to be on, although I believe the best path I could possibly be on for myself. So I'm wondering, do you think this is the best path that you could have been put on now, having a gay son?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not whether Daniel's gay or not. It's about Daniel and accepting him as he is, you know, whatever that is.
Well, you sit here very closely, and what radio doesn't do, unfortunately, is to show there's been a lot of eye contact and a lot of smiling as they've been talking to each other. My last question to you, Peter, is what are you proud of most with Daniel?
What am I proud of with him so much? I mean, he's very intelligent, articulate, and he's so generous and kind, and generous and kind to all, you know, his new little siblings. They see him as part of the family, and that's wonderful. You know, couldn't ask for more than that.
Same question to you, Daniel. What are you proud of your dad foremost?
He's so accepting. I could talk to him about anything now, and there's not a sense that anything I could do could bring shame. It's a very happy place. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're in our happy place on Stand Up Straight. I want to thank you both so, so much. As often happens, we can go for another couple of hours, but we can't do. I want to thank you both so much for sharing your story and smiling, and it's a beautiful relationship that you have.
Wonderful journey for both of you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff, Michelle, so much for joining me. You're going to be back in January with me, I know. Yeah. We have Don't Leave Joy. Don't ever leave Joy. 24/7 we run. Next week is our big Christmas show. We're doing all kinds of religions and crazy Christmas scenarios. You've been listening to Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.